Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the It's Obvious podcast. My name's Garrett Drake. I'm joined online by Jacob Alka exclusively. This is episode 227. Jacob, it has been a few weeks now, I believe. How you been?
I'm fantastic. I'm surprisingly awake and have energy at 8:30 this morning. And I'm just happy to hear you, hear that voice, hear that sultry, those beautiful pipes. I miss you, man. Tell me how you been.
Jacob, it's good to hear your voice as well. I miss those buns and those just luscious, gorgeous muscles you have. I haven't laid eyes on you in quite some time. Of course, social media is one thing, but when you are seen in person, it's debilitating in all the best ways.
So I look
forward to seeing you again, hopefully in the near future.
I'm
doing all right. It is it's a tad early. I didn't get too much sleep last night, which is a bummer, but that's okay because I love this podcast and I love you. And we have plenty to talk about. But before we do, Jacob, I would love to hear how your past couple of weeks have been.
Sure thing. It's been pretty good. Besides the fact that I've been working a lot, I've unfortunately had to take on upon more responsibilities at work, which means I have less free time than I had prior. So that kind of sucks. And I've had to sort of rearrange my workouts during my week because of it, which is always frustrating because I kind of had a schedule that I liked, and now I have to like work out more on the weekends, which is frustrating to me. But you know what, Garrett? We make sacrifices to make our lives run smoothly. At least I do anyway.
Yeah.
But besides that, I watched the Oscars. That was a big thing that happened over the last couple of weeks. And because of that, I decided to watch a few films that were nominated. Mm. So during the last couple of weeks, I consumed The Irishman, Marriage Story, which I briefly talked to you about once I finished it. And what was the other one? I'm having a huge brain fart. What was
it? You watched Parasite yet?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. 1917.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was my favorite out of the three. But I do still have plans to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, and I think Jojo Rabbit is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I might be missing one, but those are the three that I remember right now. But nice. I need to see all those because I've heard great things about every single one of them.
Was Marriage Story nominated for Best Picture?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, at least it got that nod because I think that was the only thing it was nominated for, if I'm not mistaken. I think Adam Driver may have been nominated for Best Actor or Best Supporting.
Yeah, and Scarlett was nominated for Female. And the therapist lady, the woman therapist, she won an award.
Yeah,
I think that was the only award that the movie won.
That's a shame because Noah Baumbach is an unbelievably gifted writer and director. I mean, the performances are obviously phenomenal in that movie, but what stood out to me beyond all of it was the writing and direction because like you and I discussed, and everyone I've talked to about it, it just feels so real while you're watching it.
Mm-hmm. Painfully real.
Yeah, and just a testament to his writing and directing. I've been watching a lot of his scene breakdowns and interviews with him discussing various portions of that movie. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like that one a lot. I watched on the plane to Brooklyn, I watched Parasite, and then on the way back, I watched Jojo Rabbit.
Nice.
And Parasite is just as good as everyone had made it out to be, in my opinion. I thought it was fantastic. After watching it, I completely understand as to why it won Best Picture. Of course, it's wonderfully shot and directed. Performances are excellent. And beyond all that, I think it's just the themes of the movie and the way they're expressed and implemented into the film is very effective. And I love that it's primarily a dark comedy with serious drama and even elements of horror in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a total package. I absolutely loved it. And then on the way back, Jojo Rabbit is so funny.
Yeah.
Because I love Taika Waititi's humor. And it is just, of course, I mean, he like wrote and directed the film, but and he stars in it. But yeah, his humor is all over it from beginning to end. And that's what I loved about it is that while, yes, it is so funny, there's also a lot of heart in it. And there's some pretty emotional stuff in it toward the end. But and that's kind of what he thrives in doing. I know a lot of his older films, too, kind of have the same effect where it's primarily funny, but there's a lot of deeper messages and themes kind of sprinkled throughout it. Mm-hmm. But that's what I love about his humor is that there's slapstick, there's clever humor, and then there's also a lot of like Monty Python inspired stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple of scenes in that movie that had me laughing out loud on the airplane. It was so funny. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend that movie as well if you haven't seen it.
It's not a spoiler that Hitler's like a figment of the kid's imagination, right?
I don't think so. I think they expressed that pretty early on.
Yeah.
So, because I was actually unaware of that.
Yeah.
Unless I just didn't pick that up.
Yeah, someone just like told me that. I was like, because then I like saw previews of it because I thought initially like, oh, this is like a Hitler movie, but no, not really. I mean, it is, yeah. But not mm-hmm. really. But yeah, and then isn't also Scarlett in this movie too?
She is, and she's amazing in it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, she had a big year. But going back to 1917, I really, really loved that movie. And like, obviously I went to go see it because of its raving reviews, but man, like I went to see it with my uncle and we both just like walked out raving about the movie. Like we both are obsessively in love with it. I thought it was such a good movie.
Excellent.
Like I'm in love with how it was shot. It was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Roger Deakins definitely deserved the Oscar again for that one.
And then I love the whole sequence of being in that like that city and then him like running away with the being shot at and the explosions and whatnot. And, like, you know, in a dark alley with fires. It's just really cool. I can't say enough about that movie. But yeah, that was like the huge highlight of, you know, the last couple of weeks for me. Been playing less games, but I'm still playing some games. Trying to think of anything else big that's worth mentioning. I've been taking some new vitamins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of vitamins have you been taking?
They're like these multivitamin, and they're like gummies. They actually taste really good. They are to promote healthy looking hair, nose, not nose, nails, skin, and nose. Key nutrient, nose.
Hold on, man. I got to take my nose vitamins. Hold on, man. I got to take my toenail vitamins. In case anyone sees them, they got to look healthy.
Healthy heart, nerves, and digestion.
Okay. So.
Yeah, just in case you were wondering.
Yeah, I take some one-a-day men's vitamin gummies that are pretty good. They have every good vitamin you need aside from vitamin C. It's like I'm kind of lacking vitamin C. I've been eating a lot of mandarins to make up for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I take some vitamins too. I like vitamins.
Mandarins are tasty.
I usually take a probiotic every night too, but I ran out, so I got to get more of those.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't think I've ever taken a probiotic. Should I?
Yeah, I mean it's good for your insides and maintains good bacteria and takes some solid, consistent dumps. Like I did this morning prior to the podcast beginning.
Yeah.
And, it's a good time.
Speaking of dumps, yeah, I haven't eaten Taco Bell in quite a while. I haven't eaten much fast food at all in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I have not been, I don't know what's come over me. I have not been eating very healthily the past few days, really since I got back from Brooklyn. A lot of that's because I've taken off an entire month of work and I'm scratching pennies together for food. So I've been sticking to fast food a good bit, but, yeah, so I'm not sure where I was going with that. I'm so out of it.
No, I'm actually glad you brought that up. What's going on in Brooklyn?
Oh, I went to Brooklyn for the Steadicam training workshop and it was an invaluable introduction to the craft in terms of understanding, you know, the theory and the practices and the proper ways to operate. But it was also a shocking awakening to the fact that in order to be truly skilled at Steadicam, it requires tremendous dedication. Mm-hmm. And beyond the tremendous dedication, which I'm not opposed to having, you basically have to invest your entire soul into affording a good rig.
Yeah.
And I think they mentioned the cheapest rig you can purchase, which obviously you would never want to buy the cheapest thing possible. And I learned that the hard way with a gimbal I bought a few years ago. That was a cheaper one. I'm like, well, it's a gimbal. It'll get the job done. And yes, to an extent, it got the job done. But over time, I realized it couldn't hold heavier cameras. It couldn't hold heavier lenses. And it just really was a crutch. So I had to upgrade. But same with Steadicam, built for these big cinema cameras. Cheapest rig is roughly $60,000. And on top of student loan debt.
$60,000?
Yeah, that's, I'm talking like that's just starting out. Like you can go so much further beyond that. And I think the testament is due to the engineering and the way they're built and how effective they are, but also because when you're an established Steadicam operator working actively, it's very lucrative, to say the least. And it's one of the most highly sought after positions as a camera operator these days. I mean, Steadicam's been around since the 80s, but it's evolved tremendously since then. And Steadicam was used in the majority of 1917's shoot. All that camera movement, if it's not on a crane or a vehicle, someone's operating with a Steadicam rig.
Yeah.
So obviously the rig is kind of out of the question for me for the foreseeable future, because I have to worry about student loan debts to pay off first. So my hope and prayer is that I come across a mentor in Atlanta that has a rig who's working actively. That would be sort of serve as my Yoda, and I'd be as Luke Skywalker in training on this device, because it's like learning to ride a bike or drive a car, because it's so foreign to the human body that you literally have to become accustomed to it and build good habits and muscle memory operating the machine. And it is sort of like riding a bike in the sense that once you establish like good posture and you're operating properly, it's sort of like riding a bike. You can pick it back up, but it does take tremendous time and effort to become skilled. And I think the guy who had worked the least had worked for about 5 years, and the guy who had worked the most had been working about for 25 years. And they all, of course, varied in skill level, but overall it was awesome. Like, it was totally worth going. And they were super supportive and encouraging the entire time, even though me and the 8 other students were struggling tremendously at first. It was a really, really cool experience. And so it's definitely a craft I want to pursue. I'm just not entirely sure how that's going to play out just yet.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you asked me that. Today I'm testing at SCAD to certify to use their Steadicam rig. They only have one. And I have to test today to prove that I know how to properly set it up, balance it, and operate it without destroying it.
Yeah.
And I think their rig's even more expensive than $60,000. I'm not exactly sure what the price is, but so I understand why SCAD makes students go through that process, because they're not just going to hand something that expensive over to you and expect you to take care of it.
Are you confident in your ability to pass the test?
Oh, yeah, totally. I will pass, undoubtedly. But then my fear is that will it still be available for our shoot this weekend? And we're picking up all the gear for the shoot tomorrow. So it really is a last minute situation.
I hope I will, send a prayer and hope that you get it.
I appreciate it, Jacob. I believe that the Lord's going to provide, because Brooklyn worked out miraculously. It was wonderful. And I designed this entire shot list to incorporate a whole lot of Steadicam. So it's going to work out. I know it will. But yeah, Brooklyn, aside from the Steadicam stuff, was just a lot of fun. I've only been to Manhattan once before for a COG thing, but I got to run around Brooklyn this time, which is cool. Like a typical tourist, I went to and from Manhattan across the Brooklyn Bridge, and that was cool. Just walked around at night and took a lot of photos.
New York.
Saw some interesting folks, and what fascinated me most about walking around that night was, as gigantic as the city is and as populated as it is, I found several streets without a single soul on them, which just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But it was awesome. I'm trying to think of anything I'm leaving out. I'm losing my mind, Jacob. I have all these notes I'm not even looking at. Some cool stuff. One of the students was at the Steadicam workshop was actively working camera operator in New Mexico, and he'd worked on stuff like Logan and just any movie that needs a desert or like a post-apocalyptic setting. He's worked on.
He's your guy.
Yeah, and he had all these videos on his phone of Hugh Jackman rehearsing scenes for Logan and stuff back when they shot it. It was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yep. I met a gentleman. I'm not gonna. I shouldn't name drop him, because I think he gave me information that he definitely probably was not supposed to give me. But he wasn't an instructor for Steadicam, but he had been working for many years, and he was there to test one of the new rigs that they were offering, like working Steadicam operators to come kind of beta test. So he popped into the shop for a day to test it out. But while he was there, I found out he was from Canada or from Montreal. He's like, oh, Montreal. I was like, is it true that video games have basically taken over the city? He's like, yeah. I actually do a lot of work with Ubisoft in the city. I was like, oh, interesting. What do you do? He's like, well, I'm the Steadicam operator for a lot of cutscenes in video games. So like when they're doing the mocap stuff, I'm in a rig filming them for the cutscenes. I'm like, oh, awesome. I was like, that's cool. I'm like, what's some of the more interesting stuff you've worked on? He's like, oh, well, just recently I shot the cutscenes for the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake.
That's what he said.
Like, quote, Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake. And okay. As soon as he said that, I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, I don't think he thought anything of it. I don't think he was aware of, like, he must have not played the original because he was like, yeah, it's a remake of Prince of Persia Sands of Time. And he seemed disinterested in it. But
yeah,
to me, that's awesome because I love that game. And remake is a strong word these days because we've seen how good Final Fantasy VII's remake looks. And then as well as Resident Evil 2 and 3. So if Ubisoft has remade Sands of Time, that's awesome. So
yeah, let's see if that actually happens. That,
yeah, I assume if he's quoting himself correctly, if that's a direct quote, we'll probably get an announcement at E3 this year, which is amazing. It hasn't leaked yet.
Yeah. But, what if he's like mistaken? It's actually just like the new Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I'd be so annoyed. I mean, that sounds legit because I know Ubisoft has mentioned Prince of Persia a couple of times in the last few years offhandedly.
I didn't know they still own like the rights to the video game IP. You know?
Yeah, I think because Assassin's Creed evolved out of a Prince of Persia title originally. Okay. It's supposed to be a Prince of Persia reboot, I believe.
Because Prince of Persia is like, it was a movie before a video game, right? Or was it the opposite?
It was a game before. Yeah, there's the old school games back in, I don't know, like the 80s or 90s maybe, but then the big prolific trilogy was Sands of Time, Warrior Within, and The Two Thrones. Preston and I played the crap out of those games when we were younger. Mm-hmm. I love that trilogy so much. I quote it all the time, too. Which is funny, because I quote a lot of Star Wars, I quote Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, but for some odd reason, I still quote Prince of Persia stuff.
Yeah, I'm very confident that I don't understand any of those references.
Yeah, but really, really solid game, Sands of Time. And my hope is that if it is a remake, it is, of course, beautifully, you know, rendered and runs well. But I hope that they have new elements as well. Sort of how it sounds like they've done with Final Fantasy and even Resident Evil. There are new ways to sort of experience what was once highly regarded. Like, obviously, with Resident Evil, the camera angle is different. And I think there's a couple new gameplay elements and areas you could experience. But I would hope they do the same with Prince of Persia.
So. Yeah.
But I encountered two actors this week, Jacob.
Oh, really? Are they big names?
One of them is. The other is probably still relatively unknown. But have you seen the show Mindhunter?
No.
On Netflix? All right, well, excellent show. Highly recommend checking it out. But in season two, there's a detective working in Atlanta that the two primary... they're not really detectives. I guess they're detectives, but... the two guys from, I guess, I can't remember what city, they're from DC or New York or something, but they go to Atlanta and they're working with this other detective in Atlanta on these child murders in Atlanta. It's based on a true story with fictional elements added in. Anyway, the Atlanta detective was in the TSA line in Atlanta when I was leaving, and we passed by each other in line. And we had stopped, the line had stopped. He's standing right next to me. And I looked over to him and instantly recognized him. And he looked at me and I was like, you were on Mindhunter, weren't you? He's like, yeah. I was like, you were phenomenal. He's like, thanks, man. And then we kept walking. So that was kind of cool. And then this is pretty mind-blowing, Jacob. I think you'll get a kick out of this one. So
okay.
A girl I ran sound for at Smith's about a month ago. She and I had hit it off and had a good conversation, and she was super talented. And, she reached out to me on Valentine's Day and said, hey, I'm having a showcase at, an Airbnb nearby, Ormsby's is what she has said. And she said, me and a couple of singer songwriters are doing a showcase if you're interested in coming. And I was like, all right, sure. I'll stop by. So, and obviously that's close to my place. So I get into this Airbnb, Jacob. You've been in my apartment, and this Airbnb was maybe like 4 square feet bigger than my apartment. So basically the size of my apartment is where this showcase is.
Yeah.
It's a pretty packed room, but I get in there and Missandei from Game of Thrones is in there.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought that was so bizarre because it was this tiny little place on a Wednesday or Thursday night, whatever it is, in West Midtown. And she's in there with these other singer-songwriters just watching them. And it happened, just so happened that one of her friends was performing in the show, which is why she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't talk to her because when the show ended, everyone just like surrounded her for obvious reasons.
Well, you didn't run up to her and make some dumb Game of Thrones reference?
If I had a chance to talk to her, I would have said something like, you know, it's kind of bizarre watching you get decapitated on television and now you're sitting right in front of me. But it was kind of cool seeing someone of that. I mean, obviously, she's not like a huge movie star, but obviously she was on one of the biggest shows of our generation. And she was one of the major characters. So it was kind of cool seeing her there.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, dude.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm jelly.
Yeah, had a very like rather cinematic week going through the Steadicam training and encountering a couple actors. But it was a fun week. Another fun little bit about filmmaking that I almost forgot is that I worked on set of an indie film with former Marvel, Stranger Things, and recently The Outsider crew members, which was fascinating. The reason why I accepted the gig, two of the crew members sing at a couple of churches that I've worked at in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that I'm at SCAD and that I'm interested in getting into film, so they invited me to be a grip on their set.
Yeah.
And I accepted it because, one, I thought it'd be fun to hang out with them, but ultimately because I thought it'd be just an incredible learning experience because I've worked on a handful of professional sets, but not for entire days. It's typically for like half a day.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get that experience with, obviously, all these people had worked on Marvel films and Stranger Things and stuff. So it was just as invaluable as I'd hoped it would be. I learned a ton in the roughly 11 hours I was there on set with them. But it was cool. Like, they were incredibly professional. They were all what felt like, to me, like masters of their craft in all their respective roles. But it was amazing to see how they operated the set and how quickly they were moving through setting up shots and blocking actors and rehearsing and getting all their takes and setting up lighting. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
But the funniest quote of the day was I was actually spotting their Steadicam operator who was on set. And when you spot a Steadicam operator, you literally are keeping them from falling over if they're doing any elaborate movement, like if they're walking backward or having to do some crazy move to keep them from falling. Because if you fall in a rig, it's either going to basically destroy you or you're just going to have to destroy the camera and the rig in order to survive because it's so heavy. So you have to keep them from falling over. So I'm with the Steadicam op basically for the majority of the day. And the boom op was a nice guy, but his mic kept dipping into the frame of the camera. And finally it set off the Steadicam guy. The director called cut and he was like, dude, quit dipping your mic into my frame, man. He's like, that's like the fourth time today. And then the boom operator's like, sorry, man. And the camera operator's like, dude, just go underneath the frame for this shot. It's going to be so much easier. Just go underneath. And the boom operator's like, no way, man. That's going to sound terrible. And before he could even finish what he was saying, the camera operator's like, dude, I boom mic Tom Holland on Spider-Man for underneath the camera for 3 months. He's like, I think it'll be okay. So funny. And he's just like flexes on the guy with like boom op Tom Holland on Spider-Man for 3 months underneath the camera. And he's like, you're going to do what I say. For the rest of the day, he went underneath the camera.
Poor guy.
It was so funny, but that's why I went, because these guys had worked professionally on these awesome sets and I learned so much from them. So it was great.
Mm-hmm. No, that sounds really cool.
But yeah, I had a great time. And I don't think I had anything else from my week going on that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I am so excited to be here with you, Jacob, and yeah, just to talk video games and chill for a bit, because I feel like I'm going 100 miles an hour for the last 2 weeks, and this just feels great to sit down and talk to one of my dear brothers.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear it, Garrett. You want to jump into the news?
I'd love to.
All right. Well, we have a lot of stories today. Hopefully we can sort of blaze through them, but some of them are a little meatier than others, so just in terms of their scope of importance and whatnot. But we will do our best to sort of, you know, trudge through them as we do. But we will start today with a story from IGN, Garrett. Are you ready?
I was born ready, Jacob.
All right. Speaking of Tom Holland, just a moment ago, his new Uncharted movie will draw inspiration from Uncharted 4. This is written by Adam Bankhurst. Tom Holland, who will be playing a younger Nathan Drake in the upcoming Uncharted film, has said this new movie will draw inspiration from Uncharted 4: A Thief's End and will have a global scope. Speaking to IGN, a Disney Pixar Onward world premiere, Holland revealed that Uncharted 4 was one of his favorite games of all time and that it will also be a guiding light for the film, which will begin shooting in like 4 weeks, which are in quotations.
Uncharted shooting in 4 weeks?
Yeah, apparently. I didn't even know they had a director. I haven't really been paying attention, though. Then there's a quote here that's, if I'm honest, one of my favorite video games ever is the fourth Uncharted game. Unbelievable. And lots of inspiration from the film has come from that game in particular, Holland said. It was interesting. When I sat down with Sony Pictures chairman Tom Rothman, we were talking about video games, and I was like, oh, I've just finished Uncharted. And he was like, well, why don't you play Nathan Drake? I remember being like, I would do anything to play Nathan Drake. Please, that would be amazing. So yeah, we start shooting in like 4 weeks. Mark Wahlberg is going to be amazing as Sully. The stunt department that we have out there in Berlin have done an amazing job already prepping the stunts, and it's going to be an exciting one. So seems like, you know, things are finally developing on this front. We've been covering the development of, or just this movie in general, of it trying to nail a director and actually get started while trying to work around, for instance, Tom Holland's busy schedule. But it's good to see that they're finally going to be, you know, starting shooting. And it's cool that, you know, they're going to be use a lot of inspiration from Uncharted 4, because that was my favorite Uncharted. Any thoughts, Garrett?
Let me take a peek at something real quick. One sec.
Sure thing.
I have no doubt it'll be entertaining, I'm sure, because Tom Holland's great. And I like Mark Wahlberg, too. I've never imagined him as Sully since they announced that.
Yeah, they're both obviously going to be younger.
I mean, I get the young part. I mean, maybe it could work like that. But I don't know. I hope it's good.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we don't want it to be bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited.
That's cool. I didn't realize how soon they're filming it. I guess he's going to shoot. Tom Holland's going to shoot that and then jump right into the next Spider-Man.
Yeah, I guess this was a surprise to me. I didn't actually read it before I read it here on the show. So that's cool. Next story. This is from The Verge. This is a big one. Rockstar co-founder Dan Houser is leaving the company. This is written on February 4th, so it's a little old, but again, we haven't had a show in a few weeks. So, Dan Houser, co-founder of Grand Theft Auto, developer Rockstar Games, will leave the company in March. This news comes from an SEC document registered by publisher Take-Two Interactive. This move comes after an extended break taken by Houser that started in the spring of 2019. Rockstar Games was founded in 1998, blah, 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 blah. Dan Houser contributed prominently to this company's successful franchises, including Grand Theft Auto, Max Payne, Red Dead Redemption, and more. Take-Two Interactive is the holdings company for Rockstar Games, and it hasn't officially announced the departure yet. They might have at this point, but yeah. So, Dan Houser leaving Rockstar. Obviously, this is big news since he's... You know, he's worked on pretty much every major Rockstar release, which is pretty crazy for, you know, he's pretty much spent his whole, you know, career, definitely his video game career, working at Rockstar. And they've obviously, they're one of the best developers, you know, the most highly touted developers out there with games like Rockstar, or not Rockstar, GTA and Red Dead Redemption, obviously. Then they have other stuff, obviously, like smaller things, Bully, Max Payne, whatnot. But I mean, it's kind of early to tell if this is going to have any lasting effects on, you know, the company itself, but it seems like he's been kind of, distant for a while now with him taking an extended break in the spring of 2019. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to say if this is going to have any effects going forward, but you know, it's worth mentioning, obviously, because he's a big name at Rockstar. And you have to think that the next GTA is, it's got to be well in development at this point. I mean, it's how many years has it been since the original release of GTA 5? Like, I think it was 20, like, it had at least been 2013, 2014. Like, it's been a while. And obviously, they released it on multiple consoles. But I don't know. Like, it'll be interesting to see how their company develops and, you know, how their new games fare here in the future with the new consoles looming. Gear, are you excited about the new consoles? Do you plan on getting a new PlayStation 5 when it drops?
Definitely. This is off topic. Absolutely. Yes, definitely, just for the sake of exclusives. And I love that it's going to be backwards compatible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very, very excited for the new consoles.
Yeah.
I loved a rumor that I read there. I think it was a prediction or a rumor that, a launch title will be the next Ratchet and Clank game. Can you imagine? I lose my mind, dude. You know, it's going to be at least 60 frames too. That was my biggest, it wasn't necessarily a gripe. That's the one thing I would hope for in a Ratchet and Clank sequel, is seeing all those nuts and bolts flying around in 60 FPS.
Dude, that would get me going. Let me tell you.
But yeah, people, I can't remember who I was. It was either an IGN video or a podcast. Maybe it was Colin Moriarty's podcast. I saw a tweet about it. He believes that Ratchet and Clank will be a launch title for PS5. Can you imagine if it was Ratchet and Clank and the next Horizon as two of the launch titles?
Oh, man.
It'd be unbelievable. What a strong start.
And The Order 1887.
Please. Is it good? Yeah. And I guess Xbox and, well, of course, PC would have Halo Infinite out the gate. And maybe a couple other things. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I probably obviously will not invest in the next Xbox, but I have every intention of purchasing a PS5, definitely.
Yeah. Next story. Ubisoft confirms 5 AAA games planned for release in late 2020, early 2021. One of them is not Beyond Good and Evil 2. Okay, this is written by Mackin. Ubisoft will release 5 new AAA games in the years I just said, with 3 of them getting released by the end of this year and 2 being released in early 2021. And none of them will be Beyond Good and Evil 2. We have evolved our organizational structure in recent months in order to strengthen our focus on high potential titles, and we are very excited about the idea of releasing 5 new, AAA games in 2021. How many times can I say the same quote in this story? Find out in just a moment. During the QA portion, Guillemot followed up on that statement by confirming it. At the least, that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is not one of them. Can you... Oh my god, this is such a bad article. This is an IGN article too. Ubisoft previously announced, then delayed a slate of AAA games, including Watch Dogs, Legion, Rainbow Six, Quarantine, Gods and Monsters, and there have been reports that Ubisoft is working on a new Assassin's Creed game, supposedly based on Vikings. Yeah, so people have been speculating what these 5 games are. A lot of them think Assassin's Creed is one of them. Obviously, one of them is Watch Dogs Legion. What could the other ones be?
Hopefully Prince of Persia.
Yeah, maybe it's Prince of Persia. That's a good point. Maybe Skull and Bones. I don't know. People have been speculating about one of the ones coming out in 2021 will be Far Cry. And a lot of people are thinking that Splinter Cell is not one of them, which is sad to many people, I would imagine.
It's very sad for me. I know it's especially sad for Preston. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
He will continue to be let down.
I think it's high time that everyone's probably thinking that Far Cry needs to evolve big time with the next.
I agree.
Especially with the next mainline title. I think we'll be doing Far Cry 6 at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be something very different.
Yeah, that's the challenge. I don't want another Far Cry 5. Like, I just
I love Far Cry still. I mean, I can still jump into Far Cry and have a good time just running around blowing stuff up. But that's what's the challenging thing for them, is that as fun as their sandbox is, other games are doing it too. And I think like Dying Light 2, for example, reminds me a lot of Far Cry. Mm-hmm. So, and obviously we don't know when Dying Light 2 is coming, but, you know, Cyberpunk's a big, big open world, expansive, story-driven title. And that's going to draw a lot. I mean, that, obviously Cyberpunk's coming out, I imagine, long before the next Far Cry, but when you have CD Projekt Red cranking out a game like Cyberpunk as Ubisoft, as well as their games typically sell, I would hope that they would try something new. And look what it paid off for Assassin's Creed, because Assassin's Creed has evolved in many great ways. Mm-hmm. And I say that as someone who's only, I've merely dabbled in Origins and Odyssey, but I look very much forward to seeing what they do next with Assassin's Creed. It always interests me. Like the Viking stuff sounds incredible. And their gameplay above all has, it's been a good change. So I imagine if they can pull that off with Assassin's Creed, they can do the same with Far Cry in whatever capacity that may be.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like out of Far Cry?
Honestly, I'm not too crazy about Far Cry. I never have been. I really enjoyed 3. 5 was okay. But the thing that's always lacked for me in Far Cry is the game's always been really fun. They have a very great sandbox that they, you know, they play around with. But the problem is, like, that's pretty much it. Like, and other games do the same thing, but they have other things too. Like, you just mentioned Cyberpunk. You know, if everything turns out good with that, that's going to have an amazing story, amazing gameplay, and, you know, it's just going to be an amazing world to be a part of. You know, sometimes Far Cry nails the world, but they never feel like, what's the word? Like, they always feel kind of empty to me. I think that's a good word for it. Like, which is, yeah, maybe it's intended. I think it's kind of intended in some cases, but I don't know. Like in Far Cry, there's always been a lot been left to be desired for me. And I think, like, I don't exactly know what they need to do to make it more appealing to me, which is kind of, you know, confusing. Like, I don't know what they're going to do with that information I just gave them, but I know they're listening and, you know, they need to make a better game. Otherwise, I'm not going to buy it, Garrett. I'm not going to buy it. So they better do better. Yeah, I don't have much more to say, honestly. Moving on. I have 2 Call of Duty stories. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right, one's from IGN, one's from PC. PC Gamer. We'll start with the IGN one. This is written by Chris Priestman. Call of Duty players spend more in-game after season pass and loot boxes removed. This, he means like in-game, like money, which is interesting, but it kind of makes sense. So, Call of Duty Modern Warfare players are spending more money in-game than Black Ops 4 players, either due to or despite the removal of the season pass and loot boxes. During Activision's Q4 earnings call on February 6, 2020, company president Rob Kostic answered a question about how removing the season pass for Call of Duty Modern Warfare has affected player behavior and in-game revenue. Kostic begins by saying it's important to acknowledge that removing the season pass for Modern Warfare was part of a number of changes Activision made to create a better overall experience for our player community. The changes he mentioned were bringing in crossplay and cross-progression. He adds that with the launch of Call of Duty Mobile last year, Activision is treating all Call of Duty players across all platforms as a singular community. Instead of certain portions of the audience having certain content, we're focused now on free content for the entire community to drive engagement in the overall community, Kostic said. He then talked about how removing the season pass and loot boxes and replacing those systems with the battle pass in Modern Warfare enabled more transparency to players so they can see what their money goes towards. That, he says, has worked out really well. Evidenced in a double-digit percentage. I didn't know evidenced was a word. I need to start the sentence over. Okay. That, he said, has worked out really well, as evidenced in a double-digit percentage growth for in-game spending in Modern Warfare over Black Ops 4. So I thought this was really interesting. Because, I mean, it makes sense when you, like, read it. Because, like, obviously, you know, people are not going to, like, when I hear season pass and loot boxes, that doesn't make me happy as a consumer, right? Because with loot boxes, I don't know what the heck I'm getting, right? Like, it could be anything, and chances are I'm probably not going to get something that I want. And, you know, battle pass, season pass, like, that's good, I guess. Like, it gives you a bunch of content up front, but it's also, like, DLC that you have to buy, and it's also a gate in terms of blocking people that don't want to buy that from playing new content with other people that have. So, you know, I think the battle pass system is best because it gets everyone the content for free. Obviously, that's a good thing, and it keeps the player base more engaged. And you know, and then it's kind of like, since people aren't spending money on that stuff, it kind of incentivizes them to want to maybe buy a skin or two or something like that, or you know, actually put money towards the battle pass. So, do you have any thoughts on this investor calling that we have here? These new statistics from Mr. What's his name? Rob Kostick?
Not in particular.
Yeah.
I would love to play some Call of Duty, though. It's been a long time.
Yeah, dude. I'm definitely going to be jumping in when we get into our next story here, because this next one is really, really...
You're going to get me riled up, Jacob? You're going to make me poop again if
you're
not careful.
I think I might. This one comes to us from Chris Priestman again on PC Gamer. Call of Duty's Modern Warfare Battle Royale mode apparently launches in March.
Dude.
Sources say it will have a free standalone version too. Call of Duty Modern Warfare will supposedly get a Battle Royale mode in March 2020, according to sources who spoke to VGC. I don't know what VGC is. The sources, who are apparently part of the US development team, said that the new mode is at least a few weeks away, and unless there are unexpected delays, they will probably launch in early March. The Battle Royale mode, called Warzone, and will be available to all existing Modern Warfare players. It will appear in the main menu, where an option is currently listed as Classified. It is also said that the Battle Royale mode will be available for free as a standalone game, but players of the version will be able to upgrade to the full version. Apparently, the Battle Royale mode will have unified progression with the existing Battle Pass 2. That would mean that any cosmetics you've unlocked will carry over to the Battle Royale mode. Finally, VGC sources say that we'll hear more about Warzone this week. When was this written? This was written a day ago. So, according to these guys, we're going to hear more about it this week. Let's see. I think that's all we need to read. Does this get you excited, Garrett? Would you like a Battle Royale in this Call of Duty?
Yeah, because I haven't played a Battle Royale in general in quite some time. No, I haven't even played Apex in a long time.
Yeah,
I could go for a little Battle Royale, and I love Modern Warfare, both obviously visually and mechanically. I think we had discussed it before the game even launched, what a Battle Royale would look like for this game. And of course, it being titled Warzone is cool. It's a different title, and I would hope that it differs greatly from, as much as I loved Blackout at the time, I hope they've taken a new approach to their Battle Royale with Modern Warfare, just to mix it up a bit. I don't know what that would be, because obviously I'm not a game designer, but I just hope it's a little different. But I'm very excited to hear more about it, certainly.
Yeah, for sure. I always thought, well, like I haven't played Call of Duty in a while. I put it down for good pretty much a few weeks, or like a month after it came out. But this is definitely something that's going to get me back in. I love Battle Royales in general. What, besides Fortnite? I never got into Fortnite. But I think a Battle Royale with this engine and the gunplay and this Call of Duty could be incredible. Because that's something I didn't get tired of when I stopped playing, was the actual gunplay of this game and the sound design are phenomenal. And if they can make a compelling Battle Royale experience to go along with it, and I've heard rumors that there's going to be up to 200 players in a match, like, count me in. This sounds like fun. I'm excited. I hope, you know, it's good. And hopefully we learn more about it this week, like the article stated. Any more thoughts?
No, I think you covered it, but I'm very excited to hear more.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Got a few more stories here. Hope you're ready.
I'm on board.
And this is another big one. This is from Game Informer, Brian Shea. BioWare commits to longer-term redesign of Anthem. One of the biggest flops of 2019 was BioWare's living sci-fi game, Anthem. While it received middling review scores based on the content available at launch, it quickly became apparent that the development team did not have sufficient long-term content or gameplay evolution plans in place to sustain a dedicated community the way a living game needs to in the current landscape. Many Anthem players have felt abandoned by the development team's lack of meaningful new content in the years since its launch. Today, which was February 10th when this was written, BioWare General Manager Casey Hudson announced plans for the future of Anthem. In a post on BioWare blog, Houston says that the last year has seen the team focused on improving stability, performance, and the general quality of life while delivering three seasons of new content and features. Many players have been dissatisfied with not only the quantity of content released by BioWare, but at the pace at which it has come to the game as well. In the post, Hudson says he understands that players yearn for a more satisfying loot experience, better long-term progression, and a more fulfilling endgame. Yeah, I think they would, Casey. I think they would. There was no clear announcement of when these changes would be hitting the game, but I think everyone kind of expected that BioWare would be either totally redesigning this game, or option B, just moving on to something else. And I kind of was thinking they were going to abandon the game. So it's kind of, I guess it's good to see that they're still committed to it and they want to redesign it. Because at the end of the day, the mechs themselves and the gameplay, while it is kind of, like, it's not as expansive as I would like it to be, but the gameplay itself is fun. Because, you know, I tried all the mechs. Like, they're all unique and they all have unique gameplay styles and they're all fun to play. So the game has that going for it. The problem is there's just not a lot around that. The story is mediocre. The looting system's very mediocre and there's just nothing to do. Like, it's like, imagine like playing like half of the Destiny campaign and then having like no end game to go with that. Like, that's basically what this game is. And like, even with this redesign, I don't even know if I'd go back, honestly, because, I mean, for one, I don't even know if I have time to invest in a game like this anymore, and two, like, do I even want to? Like, does BioWare deserve my money again? I don't know. I assume this would be a free update, like a free redesign, but you never know. They might just try to, like, totally relaunch the game and charge you again. It's kind of unclear what they plan to do.
You think they would just cut their losses and move on from here?
Sure.
Because that's the thing. I mean, is there, like, I'm not undermining the fan base that still exists for Anthem, because there's a guy on Cog's team who loves it in spite of all the issues that happened, that occurred at launch, and, you know, the undercooked state of it. But you'd think that, I mean, with their very shallow player base, they would just cut their losses and learn from that and just and invest their time and effort into whatever they're doing next, which I know a big part of BioWare's, not Anthem, Dragon Age at the moment. Yep. And I still hope deeply for a new Mass Effect that isn't even anything remotely like Andromeda. But it's interesting to me that they're carrying on with that. It's almost like, I'm trying to think of a good comparison.
There's also been rumors that there's a new Star Wars game from BioWare in development.
Man, I have two dreams from BioWare with Star Wars, either a KOTOR remake or a just brand new KOTOR, one of the two.
Yeah.
It would sell unbelievably well, undoubtedly.
That's just a rumor, though.
Yeah, but I think about EA, like, and think about what Respawn has done for EA in particular, and they realize, you know, obviously Fallen Order sold tremendously well. They obviously want to carry on with continuing to develop excellent Star Wars titles. We don't know what EA Montreal, what they're working on. I know they kind of picked up what was left over Ragtag and are supposedly evolving it, but we haven't heard about that title in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But they're definitely working on something Star Wars. I hope for just KOTOR in some capacity as soon as we can get it, personally.
I think there was like a story maybe a couple weeks ago that said like Disney or Lucasfilm or something was interested in seeing other developers be creative with its IP. So maybe that's a ode to Disney maybe reaching out to other developers to make more Star Wars games. Maybe, you know, they're going to part ways with EA once that deal ends. I'm not necessarily sure. But like, what do you think on that front in particular? Do you think EA or Disney would sign another deal? Or do you think like going forward after that deal ends, do you think Disney will partner with other developers to make different titles?
That's a tough call because I feel Fallen Order truly saved EA with withholding onto the Star Wars IP.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of that, Disney will probably just carry on with EA. But
okay.
I would love it if, in spite of the success of Fallen Order, and I wouldn't even like just strip it from EA. I would hope that Disney would be open to allowing other publishers and other developers to gain access to the IP.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like EA works on something, maybe Bethesda works on something, maybe
Xbox.
Yeah, Xbox.
Anyway.
Any of the Sony developers if they wanted to. But yeah, that's the dream scenario, I feel like, if Disney would open the floodgates to all the other phenomenal development studios around the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So we'll keep up to date with Anthem, see where it goes. But yeah. All right, next story. This is from The Verge.
Verge, dude.
The Verge. Industry vet Jeff Keighley is skipping E3 for the first time in 25 years.
25 years? I didn't realize he'd been that many times. That's amazing.
It's insane, honestly. Yet another big name has dropped out of E3 2020. Today, which was February 12th, veteran broadcaster Jeff Keighley, who has hosted and produced the E3 Coliseum for the last few years and has long been a fixture of the event, announced that he wouldn't be attending the show this year. No specific reason was given, and I think he further went into that and said that he didn't like how E3 was being sort of run, and that's the reason why. But here's the statement that he tweeted out below. For the past 25 years, I have attended every Electronic Entertainment Expo. Covering, hosting, and sharing E3 has been a highlight of my year, not to mention a defining part of my career. I've debated what to say about E3 2020. While I want to support the developers who will showcase their work, I also need to be open and honest with you, the fans, and precisely what to expect from me. I've made the difficult decision to decline to produce E3 Coliseum. For the first time in 25 years, I will not be participating in E3. I look forward to supporting the industry in other ways and at other events in the future. And I think he further clarified that he's going to be doing his thing that he always does at Gamescom. And he's obviously going to keep doing his game awards, which is his like his thing, right? Like that's his big thing every year. And it's what most people associate with him right now. And for good reason. I think he's really turned it into a good show. But Garrett, any thoughts on Jeff Keighley not being a part of E3 Coliseum this year?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes without saying that it truly is an end of an era.
E3 is dead.
Yeah, this is kind of like the final nail in the coffin. This may very well be the last year of E3.
Oh, no.
Maybe not indefinitely. Maybe they'll have a resurgence later on. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is the last year and then they take a break for a year or two to kind of rethink what E3 can and should be.
Good news, E3's coming back to Atlanta.
Yeah, it absolutely should. That'd be awesome. But obviously in the digital age, it makes sense as to why E3 has not even really evolved in the last 25 years. But obviously the method publishers and developers are taking to present their work to the world is evolved tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise, but it is very sad because I loved Keighley's coverage at E3 every year because he does an excellent job interviewing developers and individuals about obviously what's presented at E3 every year. And that's the excitement of E3. And I can attest to that because I've been twice and it really was truly a dream come true for me. I mean, I will forever be grateful to COD Connected for the opportunity to attend because it was a dream, like, and I got to experience that. Now I'm very sad that I may be attending the last E3, which is sort of poetic and sad. But it's gonna be. I'm fascinated to see what it's gonna be like this year because I heard even last year I didn't get to go last year that it was also not somber. It felt obviously very different without Sony's presence there. Mm-hmm. And Sony will be lacking this year. And granted, I saw Keighley at E3, but I never spoke to him. I never actually went to his set or anything. I just saw him in passing. But so I didn't really get, I didn't feel like his presence there because he was like off and somewhere else doing his thing. So I don't know how that'll affect it, but obviously online the coverage will feel very different without him doing his thing. So I guess we're relying solely on the media outlets for coverage, which is fine. I mean, IGN does a great job. GameSpot does a great job. So I'm not worried about coverage or anything, but obviously Keighley is just, he's a big face at E3 every year.
Yeah.
So it's sad. It's really sad. But, you know, things got to change and evolve, and that's how it goes.
Yeah, I think like with Sony pulling out the last couple of years, and then also the whole thing where the E3, whoever runs it, leaked all those, that personal information for all the people, like for, you know, I forgot whose information was leaked, but it was like a bunch of journalists, people at the show, like people's information just got like, you know, leaked by a third party, and that pissed a lot of people off. So I feel like ever since then, people have been kind of wanting E3 to go away in a sense, but like without even saying it, but just like their actions. So I mean, maybe it goes away. Maybe it has a couple of rough years. Maybe it persists. I don't know. But E3 obviously held a special place in my heart for, you know, it's just an exciting time for a video game, a video gamer such as us on this podcast, and also, you know, people that listen to it, obviously. I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you're probably pretty into video games, and it's basically just the Christmas of, you know, video games every year. So it's kind of sad to see that go away if that's the case. But Garrett, I have a couple more stories. Do you have time for them?
Oh, I got them, Jacob. I'm good till roughly 10:15 at the latest.
Oh, cool. We got plenty of time. All right, this is another big one. This is from, what website is this? VentureBeat. And it's titled Rod Ferguson Leaves Gears and the Coalition to Run Diablo for Blizzard. This is written on February 5th, and it was written by Mike Minotti. Rod Ferguson announced today that he is leaving the Coalition, the Microsoft studio behind the Gears franchise, to lead the Diablo franchise for Blizzard Entertainment. Ferguson has worked on Gears since it was still an Epic game franchise. He started at Epic in 2005. And then he went over to Microsoft when it was bought in 2014. The latest release, Gears 5, came out in 2019. Diablo is going to be one of Blizzard's most important, if not the most important franchise for the next few years. The studio is working on both Diablo 4 for PC and consoles, along with Diablo Immortal for mobile. You can see why Blizzard would desire a veteran game developer like Ferguson to lead the franchise. And Blizzard needs strong leadership. In recent years, major figures at the company have left, including former president Mike Morhaime and the charismatic Hearthstone lead Ben Brode. On top of that, Blizzard has been finding itself stumbling into one bad moment after another. In 2019, it was surrounded by controversy after punishing a Hearthstone pro player for speaking up about the Hong Kong riots. More recently, Warcraft 3 Reforged release has been met with more criticism than fanfare. We didn't actually talk about that because I thought it was sort of an old story. I mean, most of these stories are old, but I kind of had to leave some stuff out because we can't sit here and talk about every single thing that happened. But it is kind of unfortunate what's happening to Blizzard because, you know, obviously it's no secret that I'm a huge Blizzard fan. And anytime, you know, they're struggling, it makes me sad just because I love most of their titles so much. But, what are your thoughts on this, Garrett? Rod Ferguson from the Coalition is now leading what seems to be the whole Diablo franchise as a whole.
That's quite the promotion. Yeah. Jumping companies and taking over a franchise of that caliber.
I'm sure Blizzard gave him a lot of money to come over.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't take that job? That's awesome. I think that makes total sense. I'm not like keeping up with Rod Ferguson's career, but I think it's a great move because he's been with, even before the Coalition existed, he was with Epic working on Gears from the beginning with Cliff Bleszinski. And he did a great job sort of fostering Gears along through Gears 4 and 5. And while I don't necessarily love either of those games, they are solid Gears titles that many people have enjoyed. and I enjoyed playing the campaigns for both. I didn't finish Gears 5, but they're definitely solid games. So his leadership has obviously been great for the studio.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think he's an awesome studio head. He was great at Coalition, so I imagine he'll plug right in at Blizzard and do a great job with Diablo.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
I wonder what they want from him. Like, I wonder, like, if is Diablo just in a state where it needs good leadership right now? Or
I would imagine that's exactly what it is. Yeah. That's probably what it is.
Because it kind of seems like Diablo's been in kind of shambles lately. I mean, it was announced back at the last BlizzCon in November, but I know back in Diablo 3, they canceled their second DLC in order to work on the next Diablo. Or I think it might have been because they didn't think it would sell well enough or something like that. I don't know. But obviously, Diablo has been kind of quiet the last, like ever since Reaper of Souls, I think, was the DLC. It's been very quiet. So, and it's been a long time since that release, too. And, I'm really looking forward to Diablo 4. And I will check out Diablo Immortal when it releases, too. But I'm obviously a lot less excited for the mobile version than the actual PC Diablo 4. And when we saw footage of Diablo 4, it looked very early in development. So I wouldn't expect it even in the next couple years. It might even be like 3 years away. Like it could be that far away. It's definitely not coming out this year. I can promise you that.
Which breaks my heart because it looks incredible.
Yeah. Like that's something I wish we had right now. I would love to play Diablo right now because there's just not a lot to play. But having said that, I'm looking forward to Doom very soon.
Oh, you and me both, man. I cannot wait for that. I've been avoiding all the IGN first stuff because I want that game to be as fresh as possible for me.
Yeah.
As badly as I want to see it. I want to wait. Yes, even sir. The opening moment, I didn't even watch the opening clip because, I remember playing Doom 2016 for the first time when the song kicks in at the beginning and he cocks the shotgun.
Yeah.
I'm like, I want that moment again with the sequel. So I don't want to know what the beginning's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pumped, dude.
Side note on that story though, I was interested to see that Cliff Bleszinski had tweeted about filling Rod's role at the Coalition, which I think would be really interesting because I won't deny for a second that Cliff Bleszinski isn't a talented game designer. Because I still stand by the Lawbreakers. While yes, it was very heavily inspired by Overwatch, it was a very fun game.
Yeah,
and it's a shame that it tanked. And obviously, it was humiliating to see them come with. Or what was the follow up to that? Their battle royale. What's it called again? I can't even remember. It was ridiculous.
Let me find it.
Like Radical Heights. That's what it was.
Yeah, Radical Heights.
Yeah, that was humiliating for them.
Yeah, you could tell it was very like rushed together. Yeah. To sort of save.
Yeah, but he really is the godfather of Gears, and I'd be interested to see how he would take that franchise and evolve it after spending so much time away from it.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool. But
yeah, I agree.
I don't know who's going to fill his role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of assumed that he would be done with video games, but it's cool that maybe he would come back and do something like that again.
Yeah.
I feel like he would fit right in there.
Mm-hmm.
I have one more story. It relates to Blizzard again. This is actually a pretty cool one. This was written yesterday, actually, and it's on The Verge again and written by Taylor Lyles. Activision Blizzard exec leaks that Overwatch might become a TV series. Since 2014, Blizzard has released so many breathtaking cinematic videos for Overwatch that most of us have wondered when Blizzard would finally look into adapting the game to the big screen or as a TV show. Activision Blizzard executive's resume now hints that Blizzard did explore the possibility of an actual Overwatch TV show, one that might even still be on the way, and there may be a Diablo one too. According to the LinkedIn profile of Vic Van Dyke, who just so happens to be in charge of the part of Activision Blizzard responsible for building TV shows and movies, he was personally involved in developing and selling an animated Overwatch TV show. The rest of his resume suggests that he might have been just the man for the job. He previously worked on Disney, where he played a key role in helping the company acquire Pixar, and he apparently sold an anime-style Diablo show to Netflix as well. If that's true, it confirms a long-time rumor that Netflix had one in the works, though it's not clear if the show is still in production. Van Dyke's profile notes that the Overwatch TV series was only sold, not greenlit, and that the Diablo show was in pre-production at some point. Blizzard has not made any official announcement surrounding either project, so it's possible neither one will get off the ground. Nevertheless, Garrett, I think both of these would be really cool. I've wanted mostly the Overwatch thing. I think Overwatch is perfect for, you know, just cinematic shorts or any sort of cinematic adaptation to the big screen. I think it could really be fantastic, or even just like a Netflix series like they're talking about with Diablo here. I think Overwatch is just like even more so than just the game itself. Like, I think it would thrive more as a TV show because they've just created such cool characters and such cool like backstory and lore for the world itself. Regardless of how you feel about the game, I think Overwatch is one of the most interesting IPs out there. What are your thoughts on any of this?
I'm sorry, Jacob. Remind me of what IP we're talking about.
Overwatch and Diablo.
Oh, what about Overwatch and Diablo?
There's rumors that Blizzard is making a TV show.
Sorry. Yeah, I thought so, it was just a long article. yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Especially if Diablo was inspired by the Castlevania show on Netflix. That style of animation, I feel like, would suit Diablo really well. Granted, their 3D animations are also awesome, but either one of those I would take totally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, here in the article it said that there were rumors about a Diablo show going to Netflix, but
I am on board for that.
That might have just been at pre-production and not greenlit. So we'll see. We will see. That's all I got. Do you have any other articles you want to add?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Batsuit with you.
Let's do it.
How do you feel?
I think it looks very cool. I think someone said that the bat on his suit was made from the gun that killed his parents. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, that's a theory for sure.
I think that's really cool. And I think that might have been inspired from a comic somewhere. I think he looks a little slender, obviously, because he's Robert Pattinson. But I think, you know, he looks good. And we're just basing this all off one little teaser video that was posted on social media from the director, I think. The clip itself just got me really hyped. And, you know, it's a little early to say if, you know, he's going to be a great Batman, but this definitely got me excited and pumped for what's to come. What about you?
Yeah. Like people have been saying, it does look like a cross between the Arkham armored Batman and the cowls a little more inspired by Gotham by Gaslight, which I think is a pretty unique combination. I like how the cowl, like the nose piece, doesn't go underneath his nose. It kind of just sits over top of it. So it is very much more like a cowl, though, you pulled over your head. I like the stitching in it. I've always been a fan of stuff that, even like in Spider-Man, stuff that truly looks homemade. And this being Batman early in his career, I like the idea this suit is almost like a prototype, like one of his first attempts at making the bat suit. It's pretty cool. I also like the idea of this Batman being a little more unhinged, because Robert Pattinson typically thrives in roles where he's a little unhinged. Obviously not like a total psychopath, but the older I've become, the more interested I've become in Bruce Wayne and Batman's psyche versus just, oh, he dresses up as a bat and kicks ass. Like I'm very much interested in his psyche and obviously not only the trauma of his childhood, but the way he's affected by what he does and truly what compels him to dress up as a bat and fight all these crazy villains. So I'd love to see that explored in addition, of course, the detective stuff. But I think Robert Pattinson looks awesome. He's obviously an incredible actor, so I cannot wait to see what he brings to the role. And I hope it's very different from what we've seen in live action before, not only just in terms of his appearance, but the way he portrays the character. Because I think every actor who's played Batman in live action has certainly brought their own spin to it. But I think Robert Pattinson by far is the most unique choice that's ever been cast in the role. So I'm very, very excited to see it. And I love that they're shooting some at least some of this in Glasgow. So I think Gotham aesthetically will look beautiful. I think it'd be cool if it was like a surprise period piece. Obviously, it won't be in like 1800s or whatever because he has all this badass armor, but I think it'd be cool if it was in the 80s or 90s or something, if they want to keep it in the realm of Joaquin Phoenix's Joker. I don't know if they're going to connect the two or not. All I hope is that it is it has that sort of drama. It's that dark, and I hope I think it'd be cool if it was rated R too, because I think if Joker can be as lucrative as it was, I think a Batman film easily rated R can do the exact same thing, if not more.
Yeah.
So
the only problem with that is that you're excluding a big audience.
Well, yeah, but yeah, again, look at Joker. It made over $1 billion at the box office.
True.
So, and Batman is, I mean, yeah, Joker's great and he's very popular, but Batman's even more popular than that. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason a Batman film rated R couldn't do the exact same thing.
Yeah, so, you're right.
Especially with all those other villains in it.
For sure.
So I think they should go all in and make this a brutal R-rated Batman film. Because we've got animation like that, we have games like that, but we've yet to see an R-rated Batman film. So that'd be awesome.
I agree.
But Jacob, in other news, Blink-182 are officially eligible for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, this is big news.
Yeah, just skim past that. Where are you?
Wait, does that mean DeLong is eligible, or is it like... The band now.
I have no idea. That's a good question. I should probably read that article, but that's great for them.
I wonder if like they were invited to like say something, would Tom join them?
Or I would hope so. I would hope they make amends, do another album together. I haven't listened to any of their stuff post like early 2000s, but
dude, their new album is good. It's better than the one they initially released with the new guy.
Okay.
I actually really like their newest album.
All right. Well, Jacob, we're good to jump into questions. I'm going to bring us in and read one, and you can begin answering because I desperately need a cup of coffee. Sure. Where are we at here?
I don't know. I need to figure that out.
Oh, my goodness. Have we read Ruger's question?
Where is that? You say Rupert?
Ruger.
Ruger.
Oh, we haven't done Fribe's question. We did Broland's. I think we're starting with Fribes on 129.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for your continued support of the podcast, writing in and week out, supplying us with community questions for the tail end of the podcast. It's always the most fun. It's always interesting. And just from what I'm reading from Fribes here already, I'm exhilarated. So...
I think this is an easy answer, though.
Yeah, we cannot thank you enough for your continued support. And if you'd like your questions read live on the show, you can reach us in one of three places. You can email us at itsobviousgaming@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at @obvious_gaming or submit your questions in the Ask IOG section of our Discord channel. And always include the hashtag #AskIOG so that we know you want your questions read publicly. All that being said, the first one comes from Fribes. He asks, would you rather A, have to strip bare ass naked every time you got to poop? Which I may do before I go to school. That sounds great. Or have to strip bare ass naked every time you got to pee. Peeing while pooping doesn't count. Yeah, I'd go with A.
Yeah.
I love a good poop in the nude. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's very freeing, especially when you're on your own throne. Obviously, I've stripped bare ass naked in public restrooms to poop several times because I think it's far more appropriate.
What about in a stall?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That would make this question a little harder, but still, I think you would pick pooping.
Yeah, I mean, peeing's fine too, but...
Yeah, sometimes you're at a urinal and that's not the best scenario. You know, you don't want to strip down bare-ass naked when you're peeing in a urinal.
Rupert.
For the sake of other people.
Rupert's like, anyone who poops with their pants on around their ankles is a savage.
I agree. Especially when I'm like at home, I always declothe and take a shit.
That sounds great.
Every time.
Yeah, I'm totally doing that before I go to class.
Yeah, I actually need to do it as well. So
nice. We should Skype while we do that, dude. And just
you want
keep
to?
An eye. Yeah, keep an eye on each other. Make sure we're pooping. Okay, you know.
Yeah. And we can live stream.
I think it'd be a really good idea just to look out for each other like that.
Yeah. No, that's why I like you.
And make sure the shot's wide angle, just so I know there's nothing obstructing your poop.
Yeah, I'll have a toilet cam too, so you can see awesome. My droppings.
Thanks, man. That's a really great idea. Next one comes from Rupert. He says, I came in and asked about a podcast y'all had mentioned before, and it felt lame to just leave it at that. So I thought I would ask a question. Hopefully it hasn't been asked before, but what is the first video game you can remember playing? I was eating dinner and my dad got home from work with a Super NES and Mortal Kombat. I couldn't have been older than 6, and a memory of that will probably never fade. Go Chiefs.
Oh, congrats to the Chiefs for winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, go Falcons.
Go Flaggins.
Yeah. We have answered this in the past, but it's been a while. The first game I ever played in my life was on SNES. It was the Marvel X-Men Spider-Man game. I couldn't even get past the first level, but I distinctly remember playing it at my grandparents' house in Jacksonville, Florida, in their living room. And my mom's cousin, who was probably like 14 or 15 at the time, gave me the SNES with that game. And that is what started my gaming journey when I was roughly 5 years old.
Your gaming addiction.
Yep. An addiction I haven't fed in quite some time, but skimming Twitter and all these news stories has me riled up, Jacob. I am desperate to get back into games. So, in due
time.
My
first video game ever was also when I think I was about 5 or 6, and I played Pokemon Blue. That was my very first game ever. I had no idea what I was doing. I could barely progress through, like, I don't even think I could get to the first gym for quite a while. Like, I just didn't know where to go. But I always knew how to get a starter. I knew how to beat my rival. And then I would always, like, wander around the initial routes and just, like, battle random Rattatas and Pidgeys and just level up my starter really high, and then I could never progress because I didn't know who to go talk to. But I always enjoyed the game a lot back when I played it, and I eventually did beat it once I learned what I needed to do. I still have fond memories of my initial playthroughs of Pokemon Red and Blue. Yeah, and that was my very first video game. Everyone, let us know what your first video game was. I think that's a fun discussion topic.
Always.
Just put it in the gaming tab on our Discord. Or tweet at us at Obvious Game. Or is it? I think it's just Obvious Game.
It's kind of bizarre. I mean, the Twitter account is called It's Obvious Gaming, but the actual tag is Obvious_Gaming.
Yeah.
So.
Obvious_Gaming. That's it.
That's all we could get, because at the time, I think It's Obvious Gaming was taken or something. So.
Unbelievable.
Oh, well. Whiskey Hero writes in and says, what's an older game you boys played? You boys played, forgot about, only to find again later on. That's a fun sentence to say. Older game. You boys played, forgot about, only to find again later on. That's a good song title. I want to name a Chasing Twins song that. Played, forgot about, only to find again later on. For me, it's Metal Arms, Glitch in the System on the GameCube. Older game I went back to or found again later on. Oh, man.
This is a toughie.
Yeah. I mean, I went back to Call of Duty 3 after I'd been away for several years, maybe a year or two ago, and people were still playing. I think there was maybe 25 people still playing that game, and I have very, very fond memories playing that. That's one example. I haven't dabbled in too many older Nintendo games I used to play. That's probably the best answer I can give.
I don't know if I have an answer for this.
That's the problem, is that there isn't really a game I truly just totally forgot about and went back and played. Anything I go back to play, I typically have fond memories of and sort of want to feed my nostalgia.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem with this question, is that I don't go back and play older games. So I kind of can't answer this just on that premise alone. Not that I like don't ever want to. It's just I haven't done it in a while. So Whiskey Hero, I am sorry to let you down. Hopefully you don't hate me, but you know, if you do, I understand why.
Yeah. I mean, I hate you because of that, Jacob. So I can't imagine how he feels.
Yeah.
Carlos writes in and says, "Y'all, what the heck is up? Valentine's Day is approaching or has already passed. Do you guys have anything unforgettable that you guys experienced on that day? Something embarrassing, cringy, funny, or awesome stories, moments to tell? Would love to hear some from grade school or current life. Love you guys. P.S. Can we get a segment where you guys call Zach and you guys get him on in one question and community questions? That'll be cool, but thanks." You know what's odd? I have no memorable Valentine's Day memories or memories I can recall that are standout, really. It's all been pretty standard.
I don't necessarily either, but I had like this high school girlfriend where I did a bunch of cringy stuff for Valentine's Day for a few years. So dumb. I used to leave like roses all over the house one year, and I would like make her go like scavenge hunt style, find them. There would be like stupid notes around with each one of them. There was like 12 of them around the house.
I think that's very sweet, Jacob.
That was so stupid, dude. Like, I don't know if I would ever do something like that now. I mean, maybe I would. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was just dumb stuff like that.
Yeah, I can't recall ever doing anything memorable, unfortunately. I hate to say it.
How do you feel about Valentine's Day? Like, do you like that there's just a day where everyone appreciates their significant other? Or are you just like, what's the point of the day? Like,
yeah, I'm pretty indifferent about most holidays aside from Christmas, because Valentine's Day in particular, I've always been pretty indifferent to, because while I get like, this is the day you're supposed to really go all out and express your love for the other person, but you can literally do that any day of the week, any day of the year.
Yeah.
You could do that every day if you want to. That's why it always used to annoy me. And someone I had previously dated like really took Valentine's Day seriously. And I understand if it's like sentimental beyond just, oh, it's more to me than just someone I'm dating. I understand that completely. But when someone you're with only cares about like not really you proving anything, but sort of like fulfilling this weird obligation to go all out on a date or provide for them or do something in particular that sort of expresses your love, I think is silly, because I feel like love is expressed on a like moment to moment basis in ways far deeper than like roses and candy and a movie.
Garrett, but, is it really even Valentine's Day if you don't post to Instagram though?
Right. Yeah. Probably not. It means probably nothing not. If you don't. Even if you go all out on the most elaborate date ever known to mankind, if it isn't on social media, it didn't happen.
Exactly.
So, Carlos, I'd be interested to hear your experiences on Valentine's Day personally.
And anyone else's.
Yeah. Yeah, toss them in there. We're still in February. Home Alone 1993 writes in and says, "So I have hear so much about your band from
I have here.
Zach becoming the dishonored bassist, unplugged and forgotten, to end the spotlight as a lead singer in the greatest band of all time, Chasing Twins. Can you talk about your bandmates, like where they are now? Keep up the awesome podcast. I love hearing how excited you and Zach get when you talk about your previous band, Chasing Twins." It's funny you mentioned that, because I actually caught up with a buddy of ours, John Lowe, was the guitar player in Chasing Twins. He wrote the music. He and I went to lunch on Sunday and actually talked a good bit about Chasing Twins.
I meant to ask you how that went.
It was great. Yeah. We had a good time. Went to Fox Bros, had some drinks and some wings and some incredible barbecue as always. But yeah, he's doing well. We had a great time catching up. But John was a guitar player. We had a swinging door of bassists in that band as well, just bassists in and out. But a gentleman named Scotty was the bass player primarily. He was an unbelievably good guitar player, but we needed a bass player, so we filled that role. And yeah, Zach and I sang, and I think that was all it was. Yeah, that was the whole band. So, but yeah, we wrote multiple songs, but the only one we finished was the one that's on Spotify. But I'm still really proud of that tune, because we wrote it in high school, brought it to life, and recorded it all in my bedroom at my parents' house. And it was a fun experience. But yeah, Zach and I often reflect on Chasing Twins when we're together. Let's see. Mm. I'm going to come back to Fribe's other question next week.
Okay.
All right, we'll finish it out with Bohongalis this week.
Okay.
Bohongales, bohongales. Kyle writes in and says, "Hello, gentlemen. I write to you from the distant dystopian future using my cranial brain chip. The weebs have taken over. Genetic engineering has created hundreds of different crossbreed anime girls, and they line the streets. With no food to feed them or housing to shelter them, they die in the millions." Oh. And Jacob's like crying. It's too emotional. "We are in a crisis as the death and decay had created a new plague dubbed Waifu 213.
Oh.
It all started with VR. I lend you this information so you may stop this from ever happening. Do what's right and save us all. All memes aside, there have been some very interesting happenings surrounding VR in the last couple of weeks, and I wanted to run them by you to see what you think, if you hadn't already heard. I'm surprised Pace isn't writing us this question. First, there's a company in Korea that uses VR technology to allow people to see their dead loved ones in VR. Also, there's a new effing cam girl, still working on my censorship here, as you can see, that uses VR. Her name is Project Melody. To explain further for the non-degenerates, there's a live female that uses a VR rig to control an anime character in a VR space, and she does...
Chatterbait.
Chatterbait. I haven't heard that word before. Chatterbait streams like manipulating this anime character she created with VR. She actually gained so much traction that actual porn models are having issues with the idea. All their effing weird stuff... But as we see VR technology continues to become more and more realistic, do you think there should be rules set in place to exclude certain possibilities that can mess with the line between reality and fiction? Or should these people be allowed to do whatever they want with VR tech as long as they aren't hurting anyone? I just imagine a future along the lines of Ready Player One, where there are people that completely lose touch with reality because of the possibilities that VR allow to separate yourself from a drab life. What do you guys think? Also, you Fs. I'm not asking again. If you haven't already, catch up on Attack on Titan and My Hero. The last seasons for both shows have been effing top tier, and I want to hear what you guys think of them. I do want to catch up on both those shows.
Yeah, you keep saying that, Garrett.
I do, but I just don't have time to watch anything or play anything, which is a shame. The only reason I got to watch Jojo Rabbit and Parasite is because I was on an airplane. So,
likely good excuse.
Yeah, it isn't. That's the only. I had nothing else to do. I can't leave the airplane. So
I'm kidding. I've watched the last season of Attack on Titan, but I have not watched My Hero, the new season. So I do need to catch up on that. I apologize, Bongles, sir.
How do you feel about the VR situation, Jacob?
I guess above anything else, I guess it's cool. I haven't actually checked it out, so I don't know anything about it. This Project Melody, but it seems like a lot of people are tuning into it. I'd like to check it out one time and see what it is. So maybe Kyle will remind me sometime whenever they're live again. But do I think this is like a bad thing or anything? Like, do I think it's okay if she does this, or if like this becomes a modern day thing, like sort of like a Ready Player One scenario? I guess it's fine. I mean, maybe there's some harm in it that I'm not seeing because I haven't actually checked it out. But I mean, it seems fine. I mean, if this is what you want to watch, then watch it, you know. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't really have any thoughts toward it yet either, because I haven't seen it for myself. But it doesn't sound like any harm's being done. But I can see where people could become concerned about the possibilities of VR and the way you can manipulate people's reaction to things. Like, for example, I think a scary technology is that face replacement technology where you can basically put anyone's face on someone else. I mean, if that continues to evolve, that could be very dangerous with video, because the wrong people could certainly take advantage of that and create just mass mayhem.
Sure.
But AR right now seems more dangerous to me than VR, but I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I haven't done too much research. But it's certainly something for I don't know who would determine what is and is not okay for VR. I imagine the government at some point, but it doesn't sound like true harm is being done for the time being. But that is very interesting that that's a possibility right now, certainly. And I'm continually fascinated by the evolution of VR. I don't keep up with it actively, but every time I hear a story like this, I'm like, wow, they really are making big strides on that front. So
he said that porn stars were like getting upset about this. So does that mean like this is showing like anime nudity or something? Like, is this like what's it called? What's like animated nudity? There's like a word for it. I forgot about it. What's it called?
I have no idea.
Hentai. Is this like a hentai stream or something? Or like I don't even know what Chatterbait is. Like the website. It might be like a Pornhub equivalent. I don't think it is, but I have no idea. Maybe someone will enlighten us on this topic itself.
It's funny, we were talking about Valentine's Day. I opened Facebook and one of my memories popped up from 2011, and there's balloons on my car that one of my ex-girlfriends put on it on Valentine's Day. And Zach's in the passenger seat smiling. I'm going to send it to you. That's hilarious.
All right, I looked up Project Melody. I don't think this is the same thing. Hold on. I'm trying to look this up really quick. Spelled with a K. Project Melody. YouTube. Okay, let's see what this is. Okay, it is definitely an anime waifu chick. She's dressed in very skimpy clothes. All right, I'm going to look at a video really quick. Mute it. What the fuck is this, dude? What is this?
What are you looking at?
I'm just watching some weird video with her bouncing up and down. Yeah, this is definitely like very, very seductive. Very seductive anime girl. I guess this is fine. I mean, if this is what you're into, I don't know if I'd watch it. And like, again, I'm not actually checking out a stream. It's just like a YouTube video that's been cut together. Yeah, if this is what you're into, more power to you. If someone else is into this, let me know. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Oh, boy. Well, Garrett, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
What do you say we wrap this bad boy up?
Yeah, let's do that, Jacob. It was an absolute pleasure, as always. I hope you and I can hang again soon. And to all of you tuning in, thank you so much for doing so. I wish we could be a little more consistent. We should be back next week on time. But we apologize for the delay, and thank you so much for your continued support. It means the world to us, and we love you all to bits. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Indeed. If we did not talk about something that you wish we did, write into Ask IAG. Let us know how disappointed you are, and we will do better. Thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.